I'm Chris Busby, and I'm well known, reasonably well known for my anti, what you might call anti-nuclear science, which is quite successful at the moment. But there's something else that people don't know, and that is that I was the first coordinator of the Green Committee of 100, which was at the forefront of the direct action movement, which occurred in the 90s, and I put forward together with David Taylor at conference in Hastings, I think 1994 it was, the idea that, and it went into the Manifesto for Sustainable Society, or it should have done, policy, that any sort of methodology for taking control of society or making the world a better place was to be permitted so long as it involved non-violence, you know, so you didn't hurt anybody. So I was right at the front end of that non-violent direct action movement as the first coordinator of the Green Committee 100. A lot of people joined. So a lot of people, and we had a card index of about 300 people. The idea was that they would come to whatever demonstrations or lying down in front of diggers or whatever it happened to be. And I was there at Salisbury Hill too on the BBC talking about this when everybody was lying down in front of the diggers there. And quite a few people did lie down in front of diggers and a lot of people got hurt. Anyway, we all had funny names. So I was Wasp, there was a guy called Black Dog, and then my daughter Celia was called Carly. And a lot of those people who you identify now, I suppose, with that movement, were all in the Green Committee of 100. The problem is we didn't have a lot of money, and so we used to meet down in Brixton, and people had to come long distances. And of course, the kind of people that there were who did this were all very poor, so it was quite hard to sort all this stuff out. Anyway, we did a number of actions. The first action was Dungeness, which we'd done one in Trawsfynydd nuclear power station in Wales. That was before this was set up, and we'd sort of chained ourselves to the gate, and nobody could get in or out. And eventually they closed Trawsfynydd, I think partly because of that. So we did Dungeness, which was down in Kent, and the police came and so on, but we were chained up, so nobody could go in and out and all the rest of it. In fact, I gave a lecture to the South Place Ethical Society, which is quite a posh outfit in London. They're based in Golden Square, and previous lecturers and include all sorts of important, you know, people like Bakunin and George Bernard Shaw and so on. So there I was on the menu there talking. You can find this on the internet where I gave this lecture. They published the lecture about the ethics of nonviolent direct action, and basically what I said is that if the captain of the ship is a nutcase and they're not telling the crew the right, you know, what's correct about what's going on, you're entitled to take control of the ship. And this is certainly true of democracy, since democracy depends upon perfect knowledge. So if you tell the people in your democracy a load of lies and they vote for you, then and afterwards it looks like something bad is going to happen, you're entitled to, well, I mean, really, you're entitled to wrest control of the society, you see. And so that was the argument from the people who are running it, who are obviously dishonest and wrong. Anyway, so that was the basis of nonviolent direct action. And we did Dungeness. And the other thing we did was we broke into the flats opposite New Scotland Yard in order to, that were owned by some very rich people who just, you know, kept they just bought them for making money. So we smashed our way into that, and we put a load of people who were homeless in there. That didn't work out too well because most of the homeless people were drug addicts and nutcases and so on. So they were all beating each other up, and it wasn't very, you know, our idea of a sort of perfect society in New Scotland Yard didn't work. And then another one that we wanted to do was we wanted to do St. George's Hill, you know, the diggers. So around about 1995, this was all organized. But I left the organization to George Monbiot, who had sort of come in and joined us. I'm not sure if he was even a member of the Green Party at that time, but he used to turn up at the Green Party conferences and bore on about how the land is ours and all the rest of it. And so I kind of left that to him. But afterwards, I was told that instead of going to St. George's Hill, and all of my activists came down, all the Black Dogs and Red Cats, and we had one guy, Captain America, and so on. They all turned up there to go and put up teepees at St. George's Hill and dig it and so forth. And then Monbiot turned up and took them off somewhere else, you know, and stood up and made a load of arm-waving kind of bullshit sort of arguments about how great he was. And then it all
Yeah,
petered
that
out.
was Wisley Airfield, which is kind of nearby, and I think it was on the Saturday of the occupation back in 1995. I think it was around about Easter time, maybe the summer. There was a procession up to St George's Hill and a performance of St George and the Dragon. The Dongas tribe were there.
That's right, yeah.
But it wasn't actually on St George's Hill, but it was covered by Newsnight. I remember Shane Collins in the bath on Newsnight from Wisley Airfield.
Yes, well, I mean, but the people I talked to about it were pissed off, you know. They said that they had assumed that they were going to have to stand there and, you know, and the cavalry would ride them down, just like it happened with you know, in 1649, St. George's Hill, the
At
ragged
least they
band, the
did go to
golden
St
arm stuff.
George's Hill, Chris. And to be
What?
frank, I mean, there was the new Criminal Justice Act at the time, and the organisers were concerned that they would have their property seized by the police and by through the courts if they were to do something like that. So that's why they went to Wisley Airfield, which was a more neutral venue. A lot of powerful people live up on St George's Hill.
Well, okay. Well, then, and you know, but then you're not. You have to be brave, you know, if you're going to do this sort of shit. I mean, when I chained myself to the nuclear power station with all my mates in Trasminets, they said we were going to get shot. The people there who were the men at MOD police who were part of the nuclear police force there, they all had pistols, and you know, we thought there were lots of people that didn't come because they were frightened. They thought we're going to get shot. There's going, you know, we're going to be dead, or we're going to be arrested, or this and that. You know, you've got to be brave if you're going to do this. I mean, I've been threatened with all sorts of things about losing my house here and losing my property there and all the rest of it. And I have had a few bits of property that I could have lost. And I thought, well, no. I mean, you know, either I'm going to do this or I'm not going to do this. And lots of people in my game have been killed, okay? Like my American attorney, Stuart Smith, who died, you know? I believe they killed him, okay? Anyway, so, and this happens, and certainly there are people that they have tried to kill. Rosalie Bertell told me that they tried to kill her, and there are all sorts of ways in which they did this and so forth. So, you know, if you're going to do this, you're going to have to be brave. And if you're, and anyway, I don't, to be honest, I don't think that Monbiot was anything but some sort of stooge at that point. You know,
Did you ever
Monbiot is out for
confront
himself.
George? Did you ever confront George about this face to face?
No, he won't talk to me. I tried to confront him about the way in which he you know, attacked me through the columns in the Guardian, and he wouldn't ever meet me. The CND in Oxford asked him to come along. They said, "Look, you know, you two should have a debate about all of this stuff at Oxford Town Hall." And they did, and there was me. I was there, and he didn't turn up. He refused to turn up. And then Bramhall tried to get him to talk about it at various conferences, and he just blanked it each time. He won't talk to me. He won't debate to me.
Okay, so what happened to the Green Committee then?
Well, it just more or less fizzled out, really, because I sort of lost interest in it after all of that stuff. And basically, I said to everybody, look, if you're going to do direct actions, you just have to do it yourself. I mean, the last direct action we were going to do, which I organised, was up at Sellafield. It was really quite a clever one, in fact. We were going to go to either side of the Sellafield site, and we were going to put some radioactive material. I mean, you can get radioactive material as these gas light lanterns, tilly lanterns, those little white things, you know, that glow in the when you have a pressure lantern, and they're quite radioactive. So all you have to do is put one on a stick and point it up to one of the detectors on the perimeter fence. You see, of course, that will go berserk, as if there had been some alarm. And then we were going to sort of time it so we could go from one of these things to the next one, so that it looked like a cloud of radioactivity was going across Sellafield. And so we were going to see how long it took before they sort of jumped up and started running around checking things out, you know, to show how useless they were. Anyway, we were not allowed to do that. The Green Party supremos said, you know, this isn't on and this is not right, and you know, people will get
No,
this and
at
that.
the time, we're talking about round about 1995 here, Chris. There was a debate about whether the direct action, and in a way, the whole diggers thing was part of this, whether the direct action should be against things we don't want or for things we do want.
I never heard anything about four things we do want. I mean, that absolutely didn't happen in the Green Committee of 100. It was about blocking roads like Salisbury Hill. That was one of the, a lot of our people were there, and I was there also on the BBC when all those people were there, kind of stopping.
Something similar is happening now, isn't it, with this Extinction Rebellion, don't you think?
Yes. No, I mean, I've talked to those people. I've got a lot of time for those Extinction Rebellion people. Good for them, you know. Good for them. But anyway, I can only tell you about the fact that I was in at the beginning. And Oliver Tickell, too, he was in at the beginning, too. He invented basically invented Earth First. So he started something called Earth Warriors, you know, which had a kind of, like, instead of a hammer and sickle, they had a hammer and a monkey wrench or something like that. And he printed a load of T-shirts and so forth. I've got a lot of time for Oliver. He thinks the same way as I do. And also he's a physicist as well. Anyway, the point about all of this is that the Green Party itself more or less got rid of the Green Committee of 100 because the Green Party was infiltrated. I mean, I all the time I was in the Green Party and really active up to about 2000, I suppose, we actually did things. We really discussed real things and we had real arguments about things and we came to sort of real conclusions in some kind of Hegelian discourse. But after that, it sort of, after we lost control to the executive, which happened as a result of a kind of palace revolution, what involving that woman, what she called Sarah Parkin, another dodgy character, and Jonathan Porritt, both of whom, I got Jonathan Porritt kicked out of the Green Party, and Sarah Parkin disappeared as well, because I had a go at her too. Anyway, her husband is the head of the International Association Against Cancer in France, you know, DM Parkin. So that why she ended up in the Green Party just after Chernobyl is anybody's guess, but I have my own ideas. Mm-hmm. But then Petra Kelly, who I also knew, and who was going to come to England for our Trust Minister things, then she was assassinated, and you know they say she was killed by her boyfriend, who was Gerd Bastian. He was a ex-Stasi guy. But it's obvious rubbish. You know, she was obviously assassinated, and I know why. I absolutely know why too. Petra Kelly was more or less the head of the German Greens, okay, and she was absolutely anti-nuclear, and the German Greens at that time were like an anti-nuclear party, is what they were. And so she, I think there was a reason for it, that I think her sister died of leukemia or something like that. But anyway, she. My friend Bill Pritchard, who I stood in the election in 1994 in Wales on the basis that the Trawsfynydd nuclear power station was dangerous and it had all sorts of cracks in the pressure vessel and this and that, and they were trying to get it to continue to operate, and we had seen what happened in Chernobyl, so we wanted to stop it, and that was why we chained ourselves up and so forth. But we had, but he asked Petra Kelly to come and talk, you know, to support him in that election. And she said yes, she was going to come from Germany. But then what happened is she was assassinated. And later, in 1998, I met Ernest Sternglass in Münster. And I went there for a conference for the German Radiological Protection Society. And he told me that he met her, Petra Kelly, and she was really excited about all sorts of information that she got from some guy, a Russian scientist, who was going to blow the whistle on what was happening after Chernobyl, all the people who were dying, all the cancers, all the leukemias, this and that. And she had negotiated a series of programs with German TV to talk about the health effects of the Chernobyl accident. So we're talking 1994 now, 93. Anyway, just before she died. And so she, because everybody said, oh, she was really depressed. I mean, this was the story that came out from Sarah Parkin. Sarah Parkin wrote a book about this, you know, the life and death of Petra Kelly or something like that.
Almost misrepresenting it.
Yes, that's right. Sarah Parkin said in her book how depressed Petra Kelly was, and that's why she killed herself, you see. But, I mean, that was just a lie, because Ernest said that he talked to her, and that she and this guy had this series that was coming out on German television, in which they're going to say how everybody was dying as a result of the radiation from Chernobyl. So then she dies, you see. And then afterwards, Sarah Parkin writes this book. She was certainly doing something in Dublin with this book about Petra Kelly. And my mate Scottish Dave went to talk to her about it. And he said, well, you know, Chris Busby said everybody is dying after Chernobyl. And she said, oh, well, you know, Chris Busby, in that case, you know, I mean, my husband has done all the work on Chernobyl that shows there's no problem and so forth. So you have to ask the question why her husband, D.M. Parkin, was appointed to be the head of the people who investigate cancer in Lyon, in France. Okay, and every single thing that comes out of that operation in Lyon shows how we don't really understand what causes cancer. Certainly, radiation doesn't cause cancer. And they're always writing lots and lots of papers in which they give the definitive account of how radiation can't possibly cause cancer and all the rest of it. So that is a major operation run by D.M. Parkin, who is the husband of Sarah Parkin, and before that, he wasn't anything very special. He was just some kind of lecturer at the University of Birmingham. So you have to ask, how the hell did he get to be the head of such an important organization? You know, administering enormous amounts of money to researchers to prove that Chernobyl didn't cause any effects. So there's a big story. The big story there, I mean, you know, boil it down, is that there are lots of people who can change the world, and what happens is they get them. They kill them, or they push them out some sideways, or they dismiss them, or they lose their money, or they lose their house, or whatever it is.
If something happened to the Green Party, as they started to get local council seats, it turned from, I always remember going to, I think it was in Salisbury, a Green Party conference where they had a anti-New World Order fringe meeting, which was very, very well attended. And all this stuff got kind of pushed out in the late 1990s, Chris. So what is the Green Party?
The Green Party now is an operation. It's a number of people who've been got at or threatened, or else in some way are the wrong people. All the right people disappeared. All the people I knew who really were interested in all this stuff and could actually do things, they thought, well, blow this. I'm not going to continue to go in and get involved in all of this stuff. The Green Party is now focusing on local elections. That's what it does. So what you have is you take over, you know, Boghole Council, and everyone says, oh, how wonderful it is.
They're doing quite well here in Bristol. But look, at the end of the day, they're trying to get rid of cars. I mean, there's a replacement by electric cars, which are incredibly heavy. Also, of course, lots of mining involved in getting the batteries together. Now, I can remember, I'm sure you can too, the 1980s, where we had a different system, which was public transport, which was very cheap and effective.
Of course, we don't need cars.
Livingston got very close to actually making all London public transport free, and the result of that was that there were, I think it was 1986, maybe 1985, something like 1,500 less serious accidents on London's roads, and people were voluntarily getting rid of their cars.
Yeah. Well, anyway, back to George Monbiot. George Monbiot, in my opinion, is an operator. He for whatever reason, you know, money or power or influence or whatever it is, you know, he is somebody who will twist reality in order to help the people who support him or enable him to remain in his position. And there are a lot of those people in the anti-nuclear science, if you like to call anti-nuclear science, as well. I mean, it's the pesticides too. You need to talk to Georgina Downs about what they did to her. You know, all the pesticide spraying. You know, so she is another mate of mine. So she's somebody who can change things. But as soon as you get to say you can change things, they get you.
Yes, tell us a bit about her,
George. Well, George is a very clever and very powerful woman who I got to know quite well. I don't know when this would have been, you know, during so in the 90s anyway. And she took them on the basis of stopping, her thing was that the farmers are spraying all these pesticides around the fields and the stuff is drifting over populations and these people are getting sick. And so she managed to eventually, with her own money and money that she got from her dad, take a judicial review against this practice, and she won it. Extraordinary, all on her own, you know. She stomped about in there looking beautiful, and she persuaded the judges that this was wrong, and they said, okay, it's wrong, we have to stop it. But actually nobody stopped it, and then what happened is then she wanted to sort of make sure that it got stopped, and a new outfit called I can't remember what they're called, the Pesticide Something Society or something, suddenly appeared out of nowhere. And then they managed to get sort of basically squeezed her out sideways. They got all the money that anyone was giving towards this operation, and they made out that she was a nutcase. The problem was that she, you know, she's like me. She's sort of like quite larger than life character, and so it's quite easy to show that she's a nutcase. In fact, that's what they've done with me. So although I'm, you know, I know a lot of stuff, and I win the arguments in terms of rational thought and science and epidemiology. If you look on the internet, you'll find I'm a nutcase. You know, there are lots of people making out I'm a nutcase, including George Monbiot. Not only a nutcase in the case of George Monbiot, but also a crook, someone who sells pills to the Japanese women and runs off with a load of money, and you know, all sorts of innuendo and sort of dishonest sort of spin.
Do you think in 50 years' time there'll be a massive nuclear program still?
No, I think we'll win this. I mean, there are two answers to that. The point is there shouldn't be, is the first one, because people are all dying as a result of the exposure to all this nuclear stuff. Yeah, and now they're shooting depleted uranium around the place too, and people would die as a result of that. But the other answer is that maybe. Because the fact is that we do need, you know, to run some sort of system, they need energy in order to run their system. They need energy. And in cold countries, they do need energy. I mean, they cut all the trees down now. And so if you live in Finland or Sweden or somewhere like, no, not Sweden, they've got hydroelectric. But theoretically, in places that are cold, Latvia and all that, you know, how are you going to deal with not freezing to death? So on some level, you have to have some kind of balance between the amount of deaths you're prepared to have and the amount of damage to the genetic integrity of the human race and all the creatures and all the rest of it. There will have to be some discussion along those lines. And I mean, my position on that is that I guess in some way it has to be a democratic discussion, and people have to have perfect truth and they have to make a decision about it. So on that level, I'm not anti-nuclear, but I'm anti-nuclear on the level that they lie about all of this stuff. They say there are no downstream effects and everything is fine, and you know, nobody's dying of cancer from the radiation. I mean, they don't explain why they are dying of cancer, but they just wave their arms about. And people like Sarah Parkin's husband, are right at the forefront of that, and they just lie and cheat, and they write papers that are nonsense and so on, and then the politicians rely upon those papers in order to scam the public into believing that nuclear is okay. And idiots like Monbiot, or maybe not idiots, but certainly a lot of idiots who align themselves to Monbiot, don't know enough science to know that that's a load of rubbish, and that what they're doing is they're just funding people to make more and more money out of uranium. And that's going to result in a lot of death.
Okay, well, anyway, Chris Busby, thanks very much for joining us.
Okay, that's all right.